Welcome to the Great Lakes Golf Podcast. This is Hunter Pulaski alongside Brad Burkaw. We are brought to you by Reed Furniture. Whatever your furniture need, it is Reed indeed. In this week's episode, Arnold Palmer Invitational presented by MasterCard is in the books. Scottie Scheffler back in the winner's circle. We will break that down. Puerto Rico Open, the first alternate event of the year, took place as well. We will talk about that. LPGA making their final stop in Asia before heading back stateside. We will break that down. We have college golf, a very successful week for the local teams on the collegiate level. We will talk about that. We have some LIV golf to break down. Anthony Kim continues to make news headlines, and we just have to talk about it because it interests me so much. Jay Monahan had his first press conference in what had to be 6 months yesterday at the Players' Championship. We'll talk about that. And speaking of the Players' Championship, it is the 49th playing of the Players' Championship this week at TPC Sawgrass, one of my favorite events of the year, favorite golf courses. I think everyone enjoys TPC Sawgrass. But first, Brad, Scottie Scheffler. It is hard to believe that he has not won since last year at the Players. What's he been doing? Feels like he wins every week, but I guess he doesn't.
It's been getting real close.
Yeah. It is so scary to see how like what he could be. He's ruining golf. He's going to try to ruin it for us all.
He is, yes. So I will have to say, so he did win the Hero. He did win the Hero in December.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking me like full size or full field event.
Full, right. Yes. So full field, but yes, he, I texted it to you in the middle of the tournament and I said, Scottie Scheffler is becoming bad for business. He's making it tough on all of us out here who have to talk about golf. And we've made this joke before, but pretty soon this is going to be the Scottie Scheffler podcast.
If it does feel like we take, we spend several minutes a week talking about Scottie Scheffler. You know what's very strange is I had this like this thought in my head where we both were too young for Tiger's like true dominance in the early 2000s, late 90s. And I feel like I've been chasing like that feeling. Like I loved the idea of Tiger dominating. I liked the idea of having somebody dominating and like everyone chasing one guy. But now that's happening in real time when I'm 29 years old, I hate it. And I think a lot of it is because it's Scottie. And that's like, I don't think that should be like a detriment to Scottie, but there is a laundry list of other guys. If they were doing the exact same thing that Scottie was doing right now, I think I would be like head over heels for it. Like if this was Rory McIlroy doing this, it would be the most talked about thing. Everyone would be falling in love. I think there's Max Homa. Like there's several guys that qualify for that, but it's just not Scottie.
Yeah, it's calling a spade, Scottie just doesn't have that flair. He doesn't have he doesn't have that it factor. There are guys, and it's easier to think about that. Well, maybe not even so. Maybe you can make the connection to golf, but there's guys who aren't even the best at their sport, but they just have that it factor and people like gravitate towards them because of their personality and character. And I feel like we got a double whammy in that with Tiger. Is he was just electric. He showed emotion. He was passionate, and obviously dominant at his sport. So Scottie's got like one half of it, but he's just boring, man. He's boring.
And I think people were just begging him, like, you miss this many putts from this short distance over this course of time. Like, just show some emotion. Like, get angry. Like, get really angry. Just one time. Show that you're human. And that's, they've been trying to, like, peel back the layers of the onion on Scottie. The PGA Tour has with some of these videos. And I'm just not falling for it. Like, he can try. He can try all this. I don't know what it's going to take. Because by all accounts, he is like a fantastic person. Like you couldn't, absolutely. In a lot of ways, the PGA Tour couldn't want somebody better than Scottie Scheffler, but there's just a few things that are missing. He's a lot of like what you'd want, but it's almost like an old style golfer rather than now that we're in this year, like 2024. If this was like Scotty was on the scene 25, 30 years ago, he would have blended right in, and it like wouldn't have, people wouldn't have been like, oh, he's boring. I don't think, but now it's just a new age and there is more flair, and I just kind of feel bad. Like I didn't really enjoy watching Sunday. I mean, he had a chokehold on that event from this. I mean, within the first, I mean, by the, I'd say by the seventh hole, we probably knew that was over.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, I mean, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about his putting, something that we've been very vocal about in the past. And I think something we didn't talk about in the intro, but I'm going to bring it up now. It's important for the viewers to know that we are men of integrity and men of honor. And is it possible that we were wrong in giving Rory so much crap about telling Scotty to use the mallet? We could have been wrong.
I have that. Yeah, I have that jotted down. I think I was giving him more shit for telling him to do that. Like, you shouldn't be giving. I know like the mallet was with. In an arm's length of Scotty at all times over the last year that he's been struggling. He hasn't been able to use it, but just like putting that thought into his head and then making it into a few headlines. And then he goes out and tries it and then bada bing, bada boom. But let me tell you, as somebody that has rotated putters, there is a honeymoon phase and he just experienced the honeymoon phase. Things change quickly. You get back, you go on your honeymoon, all things are nice, dandy. You got to go back and live with that person. And that's when a couple five footers get missed, and maybe some friction develops.
Back of the closet starting to look pretty appealing.
Yeah. So I do think it's different. It's a lot different than like a Will Zalatoris, where it's more stroke. I didn't feel like Scotty, when you watched him putt, it didn't look like he was making this ferociously bad putt at it that just didn't stand a chance of going in. So he's bound to have weeks like this. Like, I don't think we can just assume this guy is going to gain strokes on the greens moving forward. That would be we can't jump to that conclusion quite yet.
Are you claiming this is a blind squirrel situation?
I need to see it happen more than one or four rounds in a row before I can declare it not a blind squirrel situation.
That's fair.
But to your point of men of honor, we have ragged on him a lot, so I do think we have to mention that he did have 9 straight one putts, which is so few on the PGA Tour. And I don't know what the stat is. I don't know what the most is in a row. But I have to imagine it's so many more than 9. Maybe it's not. It's just that might just be because they're hitting so many greens. But I'd like to think it's way more than 9. What is the record?
All right. So take this with a grain of salt. I'm going to preface this with this is not the most reliable source, but on Google Review, the top result is a Reddit post, and the PGA Tour record is 18 putts in a round. So that would just be fewest putts. So I don't know. It might not be a stat that is kept track of.
I think, yeah. What, they're just making stats up.
They'll probably make this one up and give it to Scotty just as a tip of the cap.
I think I'm like really close to finding it. I did, because now I'm very, very curious. And while I'm looking for this, I did also see that, which is a little bit of a misleading stat, but that was his first. What was it? He hasn't shot over par since August 26th of last year. Which isn't like a ton of rounds. I think it's probably only like 16 to 20 rounds. But just the testament to consistency is pretty good. I mean, he, week in, week out, that's not too bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's just incredible to me. I mean, anybody that's an average golfer can even put together a streak, I feel like, where you have like a week where you're playing well. But to be that consistent for that long is pretty wild. I mean, you'd think he'd have at least one round where he maybe shot like two over. Bad Friday or something.
Yeah. No. Nope, not Scotty. And then that was the largest margin of victory since Tiger Woods back in 2012 at Arnold Palmer. I think we'd have to talk about a couple things. Wyndham Clark. Wyndham Clark is making his rounds on the PGA Tour. Maybe not. It's all publicity is good publicity, and I do think his comments were taken very much out of context. Two things happened. One, there was a video of him moving his ball again or improving his lie, which I think is now the second time those videos have surfaced now in the last like 2 months. I don't think that's intentional. Like you simply cannot be on the PGA Tour with all those cameras and do that. And with like, you just can't, it doesn't, I can't compute that in my head where you would try to do that and think you could possibly get away with it. So he probably needs to stop doing that, but I don't think he was doing it intentionally. And then he made a comment after the round on Saturday, I think. And this was echoing what Rory had said about shrinking the field sizes, making the tour only 100 players, having some kind of relegation system where 20 guys, low 20 guys get kicked out for the year. The top 20 guys from the Corn Ferry come in, so on and so forth, similar to like the English Premier League. And people went at him for those comments. They were not pleased. They said he was pulling up the ladder behind him because he just got on the tour. But I think it, in a lot of ways, I took that as like he just wanted complete fairness across the board, where no matter who you were, if Scottie Scheffler has a bad year, if Rory McIlroy has a bad year, well, we'll see you next year. So we'll see you in 2 years, sort of thing. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. I don't think smaller field sizes are the best, but I don't think that's quite what he meant by those comments. I didn't hate that idea. Did you see the video or the comments?
Yeah, I mean, I saw some of it. I saw a lot of people were pretty unhappy about it. A lot of people screenshotting his ranking like 2 years ago where he was like 130 or something like that. And basically saying, oh, that's rich that you say that now, that you would be one of the people who would not be getting booted where 2 years ago you were. But I don't know. I agree with you. I think that, like what happens to many of these guys, their comments are taken out of context. People will clip parts of videos and not include the entirety of the conversation. I don't know. I guess I don't. I'd say it's not a great look, but I also give him the benefit of the doubt of having his words spun.
Yeah, I don't think he meant any. I don't think. I probably wouldn't have said what he said, but I don't think he like meant anything like bad by it. I do think he was trying to make it so we would have, that'd probably be the most, it would look kind of, I don't know how you would do it, but it would look kind of strange, but that'd probably be the most fair way of doing it. You just have the relegation system, which I love in like English Premier League. I think that is, no matter who you are, you can get kicked off and everyone starts at zero beginning of the year. And that really,
yeah.
I think that would make it for the most competitive league too.
Guys, yeah, meet. I don't hate that part of it.
No, no.
And I think that was missed.
Mm-hmm. And then moving on to the Puerto Rico Open, which I really like Monday Q, Ryan French. I think he is really good for the game of golf. But when the alternate event weeks come out, he just jams those down your throat. Like he's like, I haven't watched a second of the API. This is what really matters. And it's like, I understand, guy, but like, Puerto Rico Open doesn't pay the bills. API mm-hmm. pays the bills. So we have to kind of remember that at the same time. If we want our bills paid, that's how we're gonna have to do it. But in the end, it actually ended up probably becoming a more interesting event than the Earl Palmer by a long shot. Bryce Garnett and Eric Barnes, both Eric Barnes playing was a rookie last year, had knee surgery, so he's playing on a medical exemption. Bryce Garnett, only one win on tour, his first PGA Tour start of the year. He wins on the fourth playoff hole with a birdie at the Puerto Rico Open. So congratulations to Bryce Garnett. So he is now playing in the Players' Championship. So not a bad little stretch there for Bryce Garnett. Congratulations to him. And then we had a couple of Americans play well on the LPGA Tour. Bailey Tardy wins the Blue Bay LPGA at 1900 par. She shot 68, 70, 66, 65 on Sunday to finish it out. Sarah Smetzel finished 66, 69, 69, 69 to finish at 15 under. And solo third, Ayaka Fior finished at 14 under, 69, 70, 70, 65. And in a T4, Savannah Gruel, Minji Lee, and Lydia Ko all finished at 13 under par. Moving on to the college golf, do you want to do some MSU updates for us?
I can. I certainly can. The Michigan State men's golf team was at the Johnny O at Sea Island. That is in Sea Island at the Plantation Court at St. Simon's Island in Georgia. They had a very good showing this week. The boys ended up finishing in third place with a score of 21 under par and 287, I believe that would be. Yes, 287. We had some history. We had some history this week by Ashton McCullough from Michigan State. I believe you mentioned that was a scoring record for the school, correct?
Yes. Yep.
Yes. So he set a scoring record with a 12 under par. Very impressive. 68, 62, 74. So congratulations to him. That's an amazing accomplishment. Looking at the rest of the team, we had Drew Hackett at 209. That's a 74, 70, 65. So great round on round three there for him. August Mikoff, 70, 73, 69 for a 212. Bradley Smithson, 75, 71, 72 for a 218. And Pinilli Lorenzo, 75, 74, 76 for a 225. So congratulations to the Michigan State boys. That is a great showing this week.
I don't know why they have dang golf stat trying to mess us up. It's Lorenzo Pinilli. You read that ago. That is not his name, is it?
Oh my gosh, yeah. And you know, it's funny that you say that out loud because you just get caught up in reading it and you don't think about it. But yeah, we've said his name so many times.
Yeah, you said it. Yeah. I go, is that his name?
Yeah. Well, it's like that Ron Burgundy thing where they just put whatever up on the teleprompter and they'll read it.
Yeah, right. Sorry to cut you off. Did you say they're playing? They're off now for about a wee. Looks like 14 days or so. They're playing the Bridgestone Collegiate Invitational, March 25th and 26th. It looks like.
Yep. Yes, sir.
All right. Do you have MSU women? I have MSU women pulled up. If you.
Do you want to go ahead and do that one?
Yep. So we had MSU women played at the Briars Creek Invitational. That was down in Johns Island, South Carolina. They ended up winning the event with a score of 860, 1-5 over NC State. Brooke Bierman played really well. She ended up tying for first alongside her teammate, Katie Liu. Brooke shot 68, 70, 73 for a total of 211. Katie Liu shot 69, 67, 75. Layla Raines finished in T7th, 73, 71, 71, 215. Paula Bazuke finished T50th, 76, 74, 76. Shannon Kennedy finished T53, 74, 78, 75. They are now off once again for about 2 weeks. They're playing in the Clemson Invitational. That is March 22nd through the 23rd. So we will have scores for that when they come in. Continuing the success for the Michigan teams, the Michigan boys or Michigan men played well. They played this past week. They finished in sixth place, 865. Hunter Thomas finished at 68, 66, 72 for a solo second place. Eight shots behind winner. Oh, I don't know why I do this. Oh, what a name. I don't know if you're looking at this too, but... Michon from Texas A&M played very well. He finished 18 under par. I don't know if I've ever read a name like that that's not from Michigan, and I don't know why I just started doing it there. Put myself in a tough spot. Like I said, Hunter finished in second place. Will Anderson played well, T18th, 72, 72, 73. At plus one, Ben Hoagland finished T32, 71, 74, 74. Yugi Liu finished T58, 73, 74, 77. And Jack O'Donnell finished T86, 82, 79, 76. The Michigan men are now off for about a month almost. They are playing April 6th and 7th at Indiana's Hoosier Collegiate Invitational down in Bloomington. That is a two-day event. And finally, the Michigan women finished second place, three shots behind Ole Miss in an absolutely stacked field. They shot 287, 283, 289 for an 859 total. Like I said, five under par. Some of the bright spots for the Michigan team, two players finished at tied eighth place, Haley Borgia, 72, 67, 75. Sydney Yermish, 68, 74, 72. Both finished at two under par. Monet Chun finished at T17th, 74, 69, 73. 216, even par. T34, Sydney Sung shot 73, 73, 73, 219. And in T43, Lauren Sung shot 74, 77, 71, 222. The Wolverines are back in action in about 3 weeks here, March 29th and 30th at Georgia's event, University of Georgia Golf Course. That is the Liz Murphy Collegiate Classic, another very, very good field. So nice to see these girls playing well. All right, moving on. Mentioned it in the intro, Jay Monahan had his first press conference I don't know what the exact time is. Has to be months, like 6 months, I would say, maybe 6 months to a year. I have just in the notes, he's like, what a dweeb. I can't stand that guy. And I don't think it's a commissioner's job, a sports commissioner's job, to be the most liked person. But I don't think anybody likes Jake Monahan, except for Rory McIlroy. The only person, yeah. I think.
Rory claims he is the closest one to Jay, so they're buddy buddy. Yeah, there's nobody who knows Jay like Rory.
Yeah, I just don't know. I don't know what he expected. I don't know if he just expected to go up there and rattle off these very canned answers that he had and canned responses, and people just be like, oh, okay, Jay, great, like thanks for the update. I appreciate we've been in the dark now for however long, and we still don't know a ton about that deal that happened a few months ago. We still don't know a ton about what's happening with the PIF, but I think it's becoming like so crystal clear that I don't think golf is very sustainable in its current state. Like, it seems like ratings are just dropping, like plummeting.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, ratings were down for the Arnold Palmer this year when you have the number one player in the world winning it versus Kurt Kitayama last year. No offense to Kurt Kitayama.
No, definitely not. And I think that's, you have to look at like who, you look at Jon Rahm, Spanish player. There are no other Spanish players, unless I'm just missing a name right now that I can't think of. I can't think of a Spanish player in the top 50. That is a lot of eyeballs, like a lot of people in Spain that are going to watch a PGA Tour event because Jon Rahm's playing. There's a lot of people in Australia that are going to watch a tour event because Cam Smith is playing. Same goes for Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka. I think those guys moved immediately. I think, as much as I hate saying it as 29-year-old, I think Bryson DeChambeau moves the needle for a lot of that younger audience. I mean, his YouTube numbers are really good for being like a fairly weird guy. People like to see the ball go a long ways, and that's what he does.
I just can't help but not. You mentioned Bryson, so I saw this video that he made on, I don't know, probably Instagram or something the other day. It was him, and he was pretending to be a golf chiropractor. Have you seen this?
No.
And he's got his clubs. So you know how chiropractors, they kind of will like twerk on you, and then when they're kind of working you, and then they make a jerk motion and crack your neck kind of a deal.
Yeah.
So he's got his like driver, and he's got the torque wrench for his driver, and he's kind of working it, and then he does a quick little click, and then it does like a click, and he's got all these other different things. He's like pretending to be a chiropractor for golf, and it's just like he's definitely catering to the younger audience, and he's doing a good job at it. I'll give him that.
Yeah, so I guess that's my takeaways from that presser, is just like how we're in a sad state where I didn't think we would be here quite this fast. Like, I thought it would take a little bit of time to marinate that these guys are gone. And I didn't think clearly the numbers don't lie. Like, I think there is, Jon Rahm can compete with Scottie Scheffler when Scottie is playing at his best. There's not many other guys on tour that can do that. Very few guys on tour. Like, there's like a list of like two of them, three of them. So to take him out of the equation is just brutal. They have to get this figured out as quickly as possible. And the fact and Jay makes it sound like everything's all hunky dory. Get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, he was clearly pretty either uncomfortable or dismissive towards any questions about Liv.
Yeah, and then I haven't seen what Victor said, but I've seen, actually, I kind of saw his comments on Twitter earlier this morning, but it does seem like the guys, I don't think Jay Monahan's super well liked across the tour, but I think it's becoming like more and more clear now. We have guys that are voicing their opinions about, I mean, he's just said some stuff that you just can't say if you're going to say something else, the exact opposite of it within a year of you saying the first thing. He's got his foot up his mouth quite a bit.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. People definitely don't like that.
No, not necessarily. All right. That's all we have about Jay. Moving on for our 2 to 3 minute Liv segment. Liv played in Hong Kong this past weekend. Abraham Anser gets his, what I believe to be his first victory on the Liv tour in a playoff. But the story continues to be Anthony Kim. It has now been reported that he is not fit for his clubs, and he has, in which it came out, which is probably the newest developing story, but then he also, which I'm not sure I mentioned last week, just does not know how to use TrackMan. Has never used TrackMan. TrackMan's very, very easy to use. Like one of the easier things, you just plop that thing down and you're really ready to rock and roll. He needs to get a GC quad. That's even easier to use.
Do you think Anthony Kim uses a flip phone?
I don't know. I don't know what Anthony Kim. I wouldn't say I was, because when that would have been like 2008 Ryder Cup is when he played.
Yeah, Valhalla. Yeah.
So I would have been 14. So I wasn't like nearly as infatuated with Anthony Kim as what it seems like everyone else was 12 years ago, or whenever, longer than that now, 16 years ago. No, 16 years ago.
Yes, 16. Yeah, I just remember he was like really fun to play with on the Tiger Woods 08 video game.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So not being fit for clubs is really crazy. I mean, you're getting paid millions of dollars. If I was footing this bill for him for whatever his contract was, I'd be like, you're not going to get fitted for clubs? Maybe take it a little more seriously.
I have a little bit of a hot take here. I feel like this is mostly his doing, because there is not a single chance in hell that he bought clubs to play with. He definitely got free clubs from, I think he was with Titleist. What did he have Titleist clubs? I think it was Titleist.
He was Nike, I think.
No, like in this last tournament.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, like he had Titleist. Like he had clubs, like a full set, all from one brand. He definitely got those for free. He's not paying for those. So, like, if they were going to give him free clubs, they probably said, well, do you want us to fit you for them? And to which he probably said, nah, just send them to me. like what? Why would Titleist, TaylorMade, whoever not be like, yeah, we can send you clubs, but, like, do you have specs? Do you have, like, adjustments you want made? Like, yeah, so I think this is just an Anthony Kim thing. Maybe he doesn't know what they are anymore. He doesn't know how to use a TrackMan, so how is he supposed to know what his specs need to be?
I I'll tell you what. I'll give him all of, like, these, like, funny, like, quirky stories are probably about to run their course. So if he shoots a round of 76, and then, like, somewhere in the 60s, I'm probably done with Anthony Kim. I've had my fun with him, but he has now shot 76 four times in six rounds, I think, and then one 500 round and one, like, even par round. So I don't know. I mean, these guys, they're playing in the same tournaments and they were shooting several under par. So we'll see. We'll take
time.
On
that note, actually, on Liv, there was something I wanted to bring up as a side note. So it is very funny to think that Anthony Kim did beat four other people in the Liv field, one of them being Phil Mickelson. Other things. Joaquin Niemann is very good at golf. He is very, very good at golf. I'm glad to see that he will be participating in some majors. And the other thing is very interesting to see John Rahm placing in a tied for eighth place with the likes of Richard Bland, Graham McDowell, Ian Poulter, Henrik Stenson. Just interesting. That's all I'm saying.
Phil Mickelson, he finished second place at the Masters last year. And now he can't find his way out of anywhere but DFL at the Live. The world of golf is, like, it's on its head. I don't know. I saw a tweet about that. I had to go fact check it. I go, there's no way. And then sure enough, and which is the craziest thing is just looking at that Masters leaderboard, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, four out of the six names on the top leaderboard are not playing on the PGA Tour anymore.
Yep.
Not great. Not great.
I think this is my take on Phil is he's gearing up for his election run with Aaron Rodgers. Calling it now. Yeah. Calling it now.
Running mates.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, the Players Championship at TPC Sawgrass. I would say probably one of the most popular events of the year, not a major, and I would say it's probably almost popular than a couple of the majors, and I would have definitely have said that before Liv, maybe not the case anymore, because it was always the strongest field in golf. Maybe not the case anymore, but I think this is the course that everyone was able to play on Tiger Woods games growing up. So, like, very, very familiar with TPC Sawgrass. And I think it fits this time of year where we're getting to the thick of things now. We're here. So starting now, and then we're not far away from the major season. Pretty much from now until the end of July, it's kind of all systems go. So TPC Sawgrass tips out at 7,200 yards, I think. I just looked at it. 7,275. Stock par 72. A little smaller than the average green size at 5,500 square feet. A ton of water hazards. Very, very... big emphasis on approach and ball striking in general. You have to be in the fairway. Overseeded rough expected to get to about 4 inches. That is, and you're playing into Bermuda grass greens that are going to get to about a 13 on the stimp meter. Normal temperatures of about 70 to 75, 80 degrees for Florida. Never There has never been a defending or two back-to-back champion at TPC Sawgrass, which I found very interesting. And then I just have a bunch of, let me just run through these winner trends real quick, because I think these are all quite interesting. 38 of the last 39 winners played in at least one previous player's event. 25 of the last 25 winners made the cut in the previous start before their win. 15 of 16 winners finished 23rd or better in the previous player's event. 18 of the last 20 winners ranked in the top 45 of the official World Golf Rankings. 17 of the last 19 winners ranked in the top 35 on the PGA Tour in strokes gained approach in the year leading up to their win. 11 of the last 12 finished 22nd or better in the previous start before their win. 15 of the last 17 winners had the AMT time on Thursday. Still can't figure out why that is, and Brad has some term he's going to say to explain that. 11 of the last 13 winners had the top five finish in the calendar year before their win. 10 of the last 12 winners ranked in the top 45 on the PGA Tour in strokes gained around the green in the year leading up to their win. 10 of the last 13 winners played in at least five previous players' events. I think the big takeaway is form. You better be in some really good form, and you better have some course history, some course knowledge to back that up. Obviously, that 38 of 39 is huge. I think the only it was, and why I can't think of his name right now, is going to frustrate me, but it's only been done. I can't think of his name. Don't know. Drawing a blank. Oh, Craig Perks. Craig Perks. Whew. I got there. Craig Perks did it back in 2002, but has not been done. No other guy has ever in his first start at the Players, which is not the case for a ton of guys here. I think that 10 out of the last 13 winners played in at least five previous is a big one too. Just the fact that you need to play this course a few times. I saw somewhere that Victor Hovland, he missed his cut his first time here, and then since then he's been playing. He's done very well here. He's T9th and T3rd since 2022. So maybe some growing pains. Do you have the odds board?
I do. Let me just grab it really quick. Give me one second. Of course, this is being difficult.
It's on the Google Doc.
Good radio. I have it here. All right, Scottie Scheffler, once again. Scottie Scheffler podcast is happy to report that he is coming in as the favorite this week at 5.5 to 1. Behind him, we have Rory McIlroy at 14 to 1. Xander Schauffele, 20 to 1. Victor Hovland, 22 to 1. At 25 to 1, we have both Justin Thomas and Max Homa. Behind them, Colin Morikawa, 28 to 1. Patrick Cantlay, 30 to 1. Here's a name that is really happy to see this high up here on the odds board this week. Will Zalatoris, 33 to 1, Ludwig Aubert, 35 to 1, and I'm going to wrap it up here at 40 to 1 with a slew of guys. That's Hideki Matsuyama, Tommy Fleetwood, Jordan Spieth, and Sam Burns. There's one guy that I have that I'll say I like this week, and while I'm talking, I'm going to look up to see what his finish position odds are, but it's Hideki. I like Hideki this week. He had a solid performance here last year with a solo fifth. He's had some good form recently with his win at the Genesis back in February, and then a T12 this week at the API. So I would not be surprised to see him play well. You can actually find him for top 10 finish at plus 360, and then even extending that out to a top 20 finish, you can get him at plus money, plus 170. So I really don't hate Hideki.
No, and he's a ball striking machine. So that does make a ton of sense. A name that I there's been a ton of, so I screenshot the odds board probably 2 hours ago, maybe, and it has changed a ton since when you, I'm assuming you just read off FanDuel.
Yep. I just loaded FanDuel. So that would be the most recent.
Yeah. I was trying to find some trends there. Jordan Spieth went from 35-1 2 hours ago up to 40-1 since you just said it. That was the one I noticed. There was a couple more. Rory's at 12-1. I think you said a different number.
Yes, Rory is now at 14.
Yeah. Xander's at 20. Was at 20. Justin was at 25. Max at 25. Victor at 25. Patrick at 28. I think that was changed too.
Looks like Victor went up to 22. So yeah, we have seen some movement in the few hours today.
Yeah, they're getting scared of Victor. I think for good reason. Like I just mentioned that he did struggle, and he's been struggling this year. I don't know if, I guess it's just something once he gets over the hump, and I hope last year wasn't an outlier. I think he's too good for it to be that to be the case, but the T9th and T3rd, that's a guy that's not going to miss many fairways, not going to miss many greens. Really good type of player for this golf course. You kind of mentioned Will's name, liking to see it up there at the top. I don't think I like him to win, but it's nice to see him kind of get back into like this top 10. He's T13th, T2nd, and T4th in his last three starts. So he's definitely knocking on the door. Shane Lowry is another guy that he just always seems to be there. He just ball strikes it so well that he's never really going to play himself out of it. He has two top 15s here since 2021. And he's T fourth and solo third on the Florida swing so far this year. So hard to not like him. A name that is getting like a lot of love, and I'm not really sure why, is Max Homa. And that's not, obviously I love Max Homa. I didn't think he's been playing that well leading into this year. He just had a season best finish with a T8th. At Bay Hill, which was good to see, and then he has a T13th and a T6th here last year, so we'll see. He's getting a lot of love. I don't know. Is Scotty gonna win again?
It really wouldn't surprise me.
It's insane to see these odds. You never saw a 5.5. You might have saw it at the majors, maybe like rarely, but now it's just like a week in, week out thing. He's 5.5-1 in a very, very big golf tournament. It's insane.
I mean, he's clearly proven that he can be very consistent striking the ball. And if he can find an ounce of consistency with that putter, then we might just be on here for 5 minutes every day just saying congratulations to Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite possible. I mentioned it in the intro, or maybe when we first started talking about the players in this episode, one of my probably top five events of the year, I would say top three events of the year. I think it fits the perfect time of the calendar where we're starting to itch towards spring a little bit up here, and it's always so green down there at the Overseed, and I think it's a really, really good event. I'm excited for it.
Yes. No, I mean, the players, I've said this before, but there's a few tournaments in the beginning of the spring that just feel so special, and maybe it's just for us folks that are harbored away all winter, but I just get giddy because I know that it's about that time for us to start making some tee times, start making some plans, get out on the course. So yeah, I'm excited.
Well, speaking of tee times, you're playing some golf this week and you got some new wedges.
I did. I finally decided I wasn't going to let myself get bullied on the podcast anymore. So I did. I sucked it up and I went and bought new wedges.
That had to feel really good.
It did. It really did. I did. I went to, so I've spoken about it to on the podcast before. I went to Maple Hill Golf. Just awesome folks there. I'll just say they take care of you. I went in, they had a deal, two for something, whatever. And then I ended up obviously getting three because I use a set of three wedges and I was going to replace all of them. So they gave me a deal on the third one too, knocked down a little bit off the price. And then I will admit, I'm going to admit this live on the air, and I probably shouldn't. I did make a mistake, though. I made a mistake, and I realized it after I walked out of the facility. And the mistake was that I traded in my old clubs, my old wedges, and I got a decent amount of money for them. I think I got like $50, but in hindsight, the $50 was not worth it. I should have at least kept one so that I had a dummy wedge for the range. So I may end up having to buy another used wedge. So that was the one mistake that I did make, but I am very happy. I ended up getting the matte black Vokis. For those of you who don't know, I have the most sensitive eyes that are known to man. I had the like chrome wet Vokis, the SM5s before this. And if I was in a bunker on a sunny day, I literally would be blinded. So very excited to be able to see in the bunker again and very excited to have some grooves. That's going to be wild.
Yeah, the gap between your pitching wedge and your 50 degree just grew by about 5-10 yards probably.
Yeah, it might have.
Yeah. A little more spin on that 50 degree now.
It might have. Yeah, I could actually land the ball and it would go forward. So yeah,
how about that?
So, but yes, and then you also mentioned I'm playing golf. I am taking a family trip to Florida this weekend and was able to sneak in a round of golf at the Disney golf course with my brother-in-law. So I have played here before. They have a few of them. I think some of them are more Disney than others. I think this one might be a more Disney one. So I'm envisioning like a Happy Gilmore situation, but it's like Mickey Mouse instead of Shooter McGavin. So
you'll have to take pictures because I can't quite figure out, like, I'm imagining every course Disney has like the tee markers and the flag sticks are like special, but then I'm trying to picture like a more Disney, like, are we like, is it going into miniature golf looking stuff where there's like props on the holes?
I don't know. I think anything is up for grabs at this point. Anything could happen.
Yeah.
I will say the one thing that was pretty cool the last time I played is on 18, they had like a massive bunker that was in the shape of Mickey. And I thought that was kind of cool. But
that's nice. Nice little touch.
Yeah. You know, a little touch there. So, but I would literally die laughing if I got onto like the first tee and there was a person in a costume there, like, I would tell them that they had to like make fun of me or something, and I'd have to get it on video.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll save those next two on the list for next week. I don't think it's a complaint by any means. It's more like curiosity. I think I kind of know, Mac and I for his birthday yesterday went and played Birchwood because we were having dinner there last week and one of the members said that they play the farms, like they walk the farms. I didn't know that we could do that. So we went out there and they had the greens were obviously not cut, but they were, the greens were, you could hit towards the green into the greens and there weren't flag sticks in, but there were like limbs from trees or something in the hole. So you knew where the hole was on the green. And I think probably a lot of it's just the number of people at Birchwood that would use it in comparison to Bayview. But I would love to see Bayview, at least for like 9 holes, go to like the full golf course in the spring, especially now that we're getting these winters where it's like, I don't even think the ground's frozen. I don't think the ground ever froze this winter, which is insane up here.
Mm-hmm. Up there, yeah, absolutely. Even here, it's not that much different.
So, like, can you go, if it's nice out, can you go play your golf course in the winter?
Well, we're open, so I could make a tee time and go walk. Everything's open for walking.
I'm like in like March, or it's March. If it was like February and it was nice out, and it was,
I don't know. I'm sure that there are people that do. I think that. I'm gonna say no. I doubt it with the population we have here, because if you just let people go out there and nailing balls into the greens and not fixing their divots and there's no maintenance crews around, it would just get tore up.
Yeah,
because of the amount of people. I think that would make more sense up around you where there's less people playing, but there's a lot of city folk down here who don't respect the course.
Yeah, so that wasn't the, I don't even know if that was a complaint. I can't tell you much more. I like playing into greens than into temporary greens. Those temporary greens kick rocks.
I always thought it was funny because I thought that just making the temporary greens was more work than just doing very low maintenance on the normal greens. But, you know, to each their own.
Yep. All right. I think that's probably all I have for today. Have fun at Disney. Take some pictures.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that. I will be sure to document any Disney silliness on the golf course.
All right. And good luck to everyone at the Players.
All right. Have a good weekend, everybody.
All right. Talk to you.